Okay, we're picking up four lines from the bottom of Chav Beis Amud Beis with the words of Tanu Rabbanan. So we're learning a Braisa, teaching us more about Kiddush HaChodesh. The Braisa tells us, "In Masin Mesuos Ela LaChodesh Shenir Bezmano," that we were discussing in the Mishnah about the process of lighting the torches so that the people on the mountaintop, so that basically to inform everybody about the Kiddush HaChodesh. So the Braisa tells us that they would only do this when the Rosh Chodesh was seen in its time, Lakatra, in order to announce that it was Rosh Chodesh. Remember that the Beis Din declares Rosh Chodesh to be the day 30 to be Rosh Chodesh only if the new moon was seen the preceding night. That would be Lechor, that's what we call in its time. So Gemara points out that the Reis is teaching us they would only announce Rosh Chodesh if it was Bizmano, and therefore the day 30 is going to be declared Rosh Chodesh. If, however, the Chodesh was delayed until day 31, then they would not be doing this process of lighting the torches. Rather, the fact that people would not be lighting the torches, that would show that the 30th day had not been declared Chodesh, and day 31 was going to be Rosh Chodesh. Everyone would figure out through that method. So the Gemara says, "Ve'emasei masen." So when do they light the torches? La'or iburo, on the night following the day, on the day 30. But that's when then, right, the day 30 is called Yom Ibor, the day where you're intercalculating the month, because that day is which day the Beis Din can either add to the month or they would declare it Rosh Chodesh the next day. So it was only the night that followed that they would be lighting the torches. If the 30th day was declared Rosh Chodesh, then they would be lighting the torches. So Gemara says, Lamimra, the Braisa seems to indicate the Achaser Avdinan, that only for a month, which is literally deficient, is lacking, then they would be lighting the torches. We mentioned that we would only lighting the torches if the outgoing month is Chaser, that the previous month was 29 days, and therefore day 30 is going to be Rosh Chodesh. Amale lo avdinan. However, if it was a full month, we would not be doing this process of lighting the torches. When the outgoing month is going to be full, it has 30 days, and when Rosh Chodesh is delayed in day 31, we would not signal it with the lighting of the torches. And we're asked now, my time up. Why not? Why don't you just do it for both? Why don't you just make the signal when Rosh Chodesh is for both nights? If the previous month is chaser, then we'll signal out with torches on the night that follows the day 30th. And if the outgoing month is going to be male, we'll signal it on day 31, on the night of 31. What exactly is the problem of lighting the torches on both times? So Gemara says, Amar Reb Zira. No, there's a reason. Megzira mishum Rosh Chodesh chaser shechal be'er Shabbos. We don't light the torches on that case because we're afraid if you have a Rosh Chodesh which is following a full month, because of the fact we won't do it on a full month because of a gzira in which Rosh Chodesh following a chaser month will be on Friday. Because then when are we going to lighting the torches to announce on that Friday had been declared Rosh Chodesh? But Puke Shabbos, you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos, Rashi points, you're not allowed to violate Shabbos for the purpose of informing people when Rosh Chodesh has been. So therefore, you're not allowed to do it on Friday night. So you're going to do it on Motzei Shabbos. So what's going to happen? You're going to do it on Motzei Shabbos, and then the Yomrat's Na'avid Nami Amale. So if you're going to tell me that in general we should do the lighting of the torches even for a full month, then what's going to happen is that Friday, which is day 30th, which is Rosh Chodesh, also the people are going to, in the Gola, people in Bavel, wherever they were, they're going to be confused. Let me tell you, turning on Aksama, they're going to get confused when they see the torches on Saturday night. Why? They're going to say, Amre hai chaserhu. They're going to say that the previous month was really chaser. It was only 29 days, with Friday, which was day 30, was really Rosh Chodesh. And the fact that the Shliach of Beis Din didn't do the lighting on Friday night, because Mishum D'Lesha, as we mentioned, you're not allowed to light, obviously, you're not allowed to light the fire. It's an Isser D'Reisa. For here, informing, right? We did mention the Malachos, potentially Malachos D'Reisa, or Mutter, in the process of doing Kiddush HaChodesh. That's only for the Shliach, for the person coming to announce the person coming to announce Rosh Chodesh is, or meaning that's not the shliach. For the people who see the moon, for the edim, the witnesses to come and testify, that's something else. But to inform Klal Yisrael through this fire, you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. So then Odilma Malihu, or the people are going to assume that maybe the preceding month was really full. Rosh Chodesh was only really on Shabbos. It was Manu Avdo, and they're not going to light the torches in the proper time, and then people aren't going to know. The torches would generally be lit the night that follows Rosh Chodesh, regardless of whether it was Chaser Malay, people would not know which day on this situation, which day was Rosh Chodesh. Now that we made the rule that the torches are only lit for Rosh Chodesh following a Chaser month, then there's no confusion in this case, because when the torches are lit on Motzei Shabbos, everyone knows that it means Rosh Chodesh was declared on Friday. Because had Rosh Chodesh been delayed until Shabbos, then there would be no torches on Motzei Shabbos. So that's that method would help us understand when Rosh Chodesh is. So the Gemara says, wait a second, I can find another Mahalik that would work informing everyone Rosh Chodesh is, and no one would get confused by lighting the torches. How? So if we light the torches for Rosh Chodesh, whether the previous month was full, which was 30 days or 29 days, or it's Chaser, when it was 29, Rosh Chodesh be'erev Shabbos. Now when Rosh Chodesh follows a Chaser month that falls on a Friday, lo la'avid klal. So then what would happen is that they're not going to light the torches at all. And people will realize they were not lighting the torches on Motzei Shabbos, but avdina namale. The order that we do light the torches on Rosh Chodesh, which is following a full month, midayadi the Chaser hu. Then they're going to definitely know that the outgoing month was Chaser, and Rosh Chodesh had been declared on Friday, day 30, and it was because that Shabbos was not allowed to light on Friday night. That's why they didn't light on Friday night. And the fact that they're not lighting on Motzei Shabbos, then everyone's going to know that that the previous month was declared Rosh Chodesh on Friday. So that would avoid any confusion. So why don't we do this mahalach? So Gemara says afilu hafi aslam mitainos. So this could also lead to confusion. Why? Amrei hai malehu, because they're going to argue. They're going to see. They're going to think that they didn't see the torches on Saturday night. Maybe the really month was full and Rosh Chodesh was really Shabbos. But hai de lo avdile, velo avide. Rather, that which they didn't light the torches on Motzei Shabbos because it didn't say who did none. They had a crazy circumstance in which prevented them from lighting on Motzei Shabbos. What exactly? Why they're assuming that he guy didn't do it? Rashi understands, but Shichrus on Mr. Shabbos. The guy got so involved in his Suda Shabbos, he got drunk. The guy who was supposed to light the torches, and the Shaleach of Basin was lighting the torches on the mountaintops, and he got drunk and he was not able to light it. And the interesting thing that we'd be choshish if that such thing happened, but people would start being second guessing. Really, it was on a Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, and people would not know when Rosh Chodesh really was. And Gemara says, V'liavde amale v'lov at a chaser klal. So fine. The why doesn't Basin do the lighting of the torches for Rosh Chodesh following a full month and never do it following a chaser month? Why are we assuming we do it for the Chaser month and not the Mali month? Meaning, why choose one over the other? So you'd have the same way of understanding. And this way also, if Rosh Chodesh follows a Chaser month, then people, and falls out on Friday, we don't light the torches on Motzei Shabbos, people will know the previous month has been Chaser, and Friday be declared Rosh Chodesh. And so that would be the same, you wouldn't have the Chashash of Fridays. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Mishum Bitul Malach Al Am Shnei Yamim. The Chachamim didn't want to institute this method for lighting the torches because we don't want people to have to work for 2 days. Big Machlokas Rashi tells us, what is it discussing? Well, first discuss Rashi, and we'll mention Tosa's point. The Rashi is pointing out that the people who lived in Chutz La'aretz, they would have to every year keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. They would have to keep both because on the days of 30 and 31 following Rosh Chodesh Elul, they wouldn't know when Rosh Hashanah was. And the reason being that if the torches would be lit only for Rosh Chodesh following a Male month, then people in Chutz La'aretz would never know until the night following day 31, which day was declared Rosh Chodesh. So if that's the case, when it comes to Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, which is Rosh Hashanah, right? Avisir Nala de Malacha on Rosh Hashanah is Rashi. This is again Shittas Rashi. The thing is that every year they would have to prevent, they wouldn't be allowed to do Malacha for 2 days rather than 1 day. Again, we're assuming that this was before the time they had to keep 2 days anyway. The people in Chutz La'aretz, they would always have to refrain from doing work on day 30th from Rosh Chodesh Elul as well on day 31, because they wouldn't know until the night the following day 31 which day really in fact been declared Rosh Hashanah. So therefore the Chachamim chose the option of lighting torches only for Rosh Chodesh that follows a Chaser month. So what happens? What do they happen that way? And that way they figure out, it becomes known which night following day 30 whether or not Rosh Chodesh had been declared that day. So the people would refrain from doing Malacha on day 30 on the chance that it had been declared Rosh Chodesh. And if day 30 of Elul had really been declared Rosh Chodesh, right? So that's we assume that that's the case in most days, then most the people of Chutz La'aretz would be informed of this by the torches that were lit that night, and they're permitted to do malacha during the rest of day 31. So therefore, they would refrain from doing malacha for 2 days only if Elul had in fact made male with Rosh Chodesh being delayed until day 31. That is the shita of Rashi, and that's why we wanted to avoid that. However, Tosus argue, and they say, no, maybe we're just assuming that every Rosh Chodesh, we know there's a minhag that people don't do malacha, so especially the nashim for sure. That's why we have four aliyahs, right? We have four aliyahs on days where there's some sort of form of Isra Malacha, that's before Aliyah's on Chol HaMoed. So Tosfos assuming based on the minhag of the fact that people kept the custom of not doing Malacha Rosh Chodesh, that the Chachamim didn't want people to not know which day was Rosh Chodesh, to have to keep two Rosh Chodeshes, in which case they would have to be But Polish Malacha, or at least Mitzad Minag, for 2 days. So that is the Machlokas Rashi. Tosos, by the way, that's what the Abaye's answer is, that's why we don't do it on, we do it on Chaser, and rather than Malach, because we avoid people having to unnecessarily refrain from Malacha for 2 days. So then the Mishnah continues, Ketzad ayu masin masuas mavin klonasos. How did they light the torches? They would bring long poles of cedar wood. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Arba mine arazim hem. There are four types of erez. The erez, the tree. Erez, karsom, eitz, shemen of rosh. There's erez, karsom, eitz, shemen of rosh. Apparently, erez is not only the name of a specific tree, but also is a type of, it's multiple trees. So Rav Yehuda refers to the three psukim that are actually in pasuk in Yeshayahu, which is erez, eitz, shemen of rosh, and the one of karsom, which is another one mentioning erez. So now the Gemara says, karsom, what is karsom? Amarav adra. It's an adra tree. This is a type of eder tree mentioned in the Gemara. Beitza, that's what adra tree. Dvei Rav Shila Amrei Mavliga tree. Vamrei Lei Zo Gulmish. Again, we don't really know exactly what these things are, but that's the karsom tree. Upligi de Rabba Bar Avuna argues in what the reviewed a statement that there are four kinds of eres is arguing on Rabba Bar Avuna. Because Amar Rabba Bar Avuna, Rabba Bar Avuna says, Amar Bei Rav, they said in the name of Rav, in the base midrash of Rav, Asara Mine Arazim Him, that there are really 10 types of eres. Shinemar Eten Bamidbar Eres Shita Vahadas Vaitz. I will set in the wilderness Erez, Shita, Hadas, Eitz, Shemen, and I'll place in the desert Brosh, Tidar, Tashur, and I'll put them together. This is Pasuk in Yeshayahu. It's seven types of trees. So the Gemara's first understanding, which are they? Erez is ours. Erez is what we know as cedar tree. Shita is Tornisa. Again, most of them are defined by Lazi Rashi, so I'm going to go with, try to do the definitions, is a pine tree. Hadas is Asa, that's the Hadasim that we have on Sukkis, right? The myrtle tree, the Aaron myrtle branches. Eitz Shemen Afarsama, it's the balsam tree. Afar Simon, Barosh Barsa, Barosh is a different wood tree, and Tidar is Shaga, another type of, also type of wood tree, and Tashur is Shervina, a Shervina tree. Okay? These are different, we don't know exactly what these trees are. So Hane Shiva have, but again, these numbers are seven. What are the other three types of Erez? Kiyasa Ravdimi Amar, Hosifaleim, Almonim, Almonim, Algotim. The Chachamim added to the list of seven trees is Almonim, Almonim, and Almogin. So the Gemara says, what are these three types of trees? Alonim butme. Alonim are an elm tree. Almonim butme are there someone that says it's an oak tree, but balute is an oak tree. Almugin is kasisa. Almugim is a coral. The coral is a tree-like structure Rashi describes as growing from the floor of the bed of the sea, and it's something which shows that we're going to see is very expensive. So the Gemara says, Ika de Amre, Aronim, Armonim, and Almogim. There are those who say that the last three types are Aronim, Armonim, and Almogim. Those are the types of three things as well. The Gemara says, Aronim is Arme. Armonim are the type of dark green leaves. Armonim is Dulave. Armonim are chestnuts. Almogim, Ksisa, is maybe defined as coral. So the Gemara says, the pasuk says, which talks about we getting coral from the sea, "Vitzi adir loy avirenu," and a mighty ship cannot cross it. This is a pasuk in Yeshayahu, which Yeshayahu is being has a nevuah. He's having a prophecy that a river is going to come forth from the Beis Hamikdash, that the water is going to flow so strong that even a ship is not able to go down these rivers, these waters, these flowing waters. Amar Rav, so Rav said, "Zo borne gedola." This is talking about a very strong, a mighty ship, which is a very large borne. The Borni is a type of large ships. The Gemara says, Heichi Avdis, so how would they use this large Borni? Maisu Shis Alfe Gavri Betresa Yarche Shasa. So what did they do? They would bring 6,000 men 12 months at a time, V'amrilei, or some say, Tresa Alfe Gavri Betresa Yarche Shasa, 12,000 men for 6 months at a time. V'tanele Chala Ad Da Shancha. So they would use these people, and they would load the ships with sand until it would settle. Rashi describes it as something that's like on the seabed. Rashi describes that the coral fields were located in shallow water. The depth was not the height of Borni, and when the large ship would settle on the seabed, the sides of the ship would come off from the surface of the sea, and that's how Rashi describes it. V'nachis bar amurai, and a diver would go down. V'katar atune dechinta b'chisasa, he would tie ropes of flax, and Rashi says because they were very tight, they were strong, they wouldn't snap easily. He would tie them to the roots of the coral. V'katar luhu b'sefnifgasa, they would tie the ropes to the ship. V'natle chala v'shadil avrai, he would take the sand and he would throw it overboard. V'kama demadalia akara masaya. And as the ship would rise, it would uproot the coral from the seabed and bring it to the surface of where the ship was. Machlif al-chad train b'kaspa. The coral was so expensive, they could exchange coral for 2 measures of silver. plus Parvasi Havyan, and there was three ports, Tarte Bay Armai, two in the Armenian territory, some of the Girsa of the Romai, the Roman territory, Vichadid de Bay Parsayan by the Persian territory, the Ve Armai Maskan Kasisasa. The two by the Armenian territory would bring up coral, the Ve Parsay Maskan Marginasa. They would have this similar thing, but they would dive for pearls. The divers would get pearls from the port. Umakari Parvasa de Mishagi. They would call this, Rashi defines it as the port of the king's place. So Gemara says, "Amar b'yoychanan kol shita v'shita shenaluch nachrim mishalayim." So we're discussing this pasuk. So we mentioned another point of that. This pasuk that every pine tree that the non Jews took from Mishalayim, also the Kadosh Baruch Hu la'achzira la. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to restore this pine trees to Klal Yisrael. Shenemar eten b'mimbar eres shita. I'm going to put in the wilderness cedar and pine. Ve'en midbar ela Yerushalayim. And when say the wilderness, that's only referring to Yerushalayim. Shenemar Tzion midbar ha'isa. We know that Tzion many times is a reference to Yerushalayim. And Tzion is a reference to Yerushalayim, that Tzion is going to be a place, has become a wilderness. So we see that Tzion and Etzim Bermer's Erez Shita is a reference to that the Yerushalayim will be back with the pine trees that they have. So the Gemara says another explanation. Essentially, we have a lot of pine trees in Yerushalayim. Someone who learns Torah and does not teach Torah to others, he's like a myrtle in the wilderness. Why? Like the hadas tree, the hadasim that we have, they smell very nice. Hadasim smell beautiful. However, in the middle of the wilderness, nobody can enjoy the fragrance, nobody can enjoy the smell. So too, a Talmud Chacham, who does not give over his Torah to others, you're preventing people from the beautiful smell of Torah. Unless you think it's only from somebody, it doesn't say not the Gadol Ador, someone who thinks is Roy, that I think the Baba Chavis have a famous line, that if you know Aleph and Beis, then you should teach Aleph. We always have we daven every day. It's not something that's just for the Rabbanim to do. Everybody should be teaching Torah in some capacity or another, to your children, to your family, to your friends, try to increase shiurim, right? If a person, we daven lilmod ulilamid, we daven every day in Avarab, we ask a Kodesh Baruch Hu, not just to learn Torah, but we want to teach Torah over. You should always be striving to teach over Torah whenever you can. Ika de Amre. So those who say, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan's last statement was called Alome Torah Melamdem Makom Shin Talmid Chachamim. Someone who learns Torah and he teaches Torah in a place where there's not so many Talmid Chachamim, Dome Lahadas Minor. Now he's similar to the myrtle, it smells so beautiful, De Chaviv, because it's so precious. Everybody wants to smell it and there's not so much Torah there. That's a wonderful opportunity. Remember Rabbi Yochanan said further, Oy Lahem Oiv De Chachamim. Woe is to the Ovdei Chachamim, who they persecuted the Jews. She'ein lahem takana. They have no remedy, and what they've destroyed is irreplaceable. She'nemar tachas ha'nechoshes aviv zahav v'tachas ha'barzel aviv kesef v'tachas ha'atzim nechoshes v'tachas ha'avanim barzel. It says, there's going to be, in a place of copper, it's going to bring gold, in a place of iron, it's going to bring silver, in a place of wood and copper, there's going to be stones of iron. So these things, those things you can replace. However, it says, Rabbi Yochanan, tachas Rabbi Akiva, chaver of my mavien, we're in the place of Rabbi Akiva. What can you bring back in their place of the Talmidei Chachamim? And there's nothing you can bring back in the place of the Chachamim. Also, we had it just recently in World War II, and the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, is when they destroyed all the possessions, everything like that, like we're saying in the Pesukim. That also is terrible, but we could have that back. The Takas Rabbi Chana and Takas, the 6 million Jews that they can never bring back. The Pasuk says, Alayim Omer, V'nikesi Damam Lo Nikesi. That you could cleanse the nations of the other from their sins, from the blood of Klal Yisrael that they were shed, I will not cleanse them. And they will not be cleansed. We quote this pasuk in the Avarachamim, in the Kesi Damalon, in the Kesi Akash Baruch, who's saying that the blood of Israel that they have shed, I will not cleanse them. I will not give an Avar Kapara for killing Klal Yisrael. Go back to the Mishnah, Mi Beis Baltin. So which points would they light the torches? The Gemara says, from Beis Baltin. They would not move until they saw the entire Chutz La'aretz before him like a bonfire. So Mar says, my Beis Baltin, where is Beis Baltin? Amarav Zo Bira. Beis Baltin is considered Bira. Now, Tosos define Bira as a place that, a place close to Bavel, basically in Eretz Yisrael. It's understand Mashma Shum Eretz Yisrael. Tosos says, must be on the border of Eretz Yisrael. And my Gola, what's defined by the Gola? What, the Mishnah can't be in the entire Bavel. It didn't see the entire Bavel. So rather, it says, Mar says, Zo Pupadisa must be referring to Pupadisa. It's called the Gola because it had the main Jewish settlement in Bavel, so that's why it assumes from there they'd be able to spread the word to Bavel. My Meduras Aish, what does the mission mean that it would, the entire Chutz La'aretz would be like a bonfire, and all Bavel is lined up like a bonfire? I don't know, it actually looked like Kol Echad V'Echad Notal Vuka Biyada. Every person in the Chutz La'aretz, upon seeing Beis Baltin, they would take the torch in their hands, V'Ola L'Rosh Gago, and they'd go up to the top of their roof, and this apparently looked like the entire city, one large bonfire. That's why it looked like, that's what we're mentioning, it looked like a Meduras Aish, like a big bonfire. Tanya, I'm sure the kids had a lot of fun with that. The Gemara says, Tanya, we learned in Braisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Amir Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Af Charim v'Chayr v'Geder v'Charvoseh. The torches were also in the mountains of Charim, Chayr, Geder, and the other places. these places where bonfires were lit. Ika d'amrei beni ubeni havikaime. There are those who say that the points out of Rabbi Shimon and Elazar were situated in the points mentioned by the Mishnah. Ika d'amrei lahach gisa d'Eretz Yisrael havikaime. And there are those who say that there are places on the other side of Eretz Yisrael. So then the Gemara says, mar chashiv d'hai gisa. So one point of Eretz Yisrael. Mar chashiv d'hai gisa, where there's another point of Eretz Yisrael. Meaning that the two different sections of Eretz Yisrael would reach towards Bavel. The torches were lit in both routes. That's what the Mishnah lists. One point, and whereas Rabbi Shimon Elazar is mentioning another point from where they would potentially light the bonfires. And where it says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bein Kol Echad V'Echad Shmona Parsos. Between each of these points, the later points, there's an 8 parsos, and a parsa is around 3 miles. Kama Avalu, so how many are combined distance between the 5 points of Har Zeisim to Beis Baltan? Tlazim and Tartan, there's 32 parsos. And that's 32 parsos, so roughly, again, depending on what we say, basically like 100. It's a miles, about roughly 100 miles. I don't know, I did it on like Google Maps, just a bit kitzer, and it came out to around 200 or more. I did it from Yerushalayim to a place above, I just randomly into Google Maps. That was 250 miles, not exactly sure how the parcels line up, but either, the Gemara says, Vahai, no, Tuva, but now there are many more parcels between Beis Baldan and Har Zeisim. Same, the Gemara says, Rabbi, Istamuya, Istayim, Lahai, Drache. Maybe this is what the Gemara is mentioning, that they didn't have direct roads. But even if you do it directly, I don't know, it doesn't seem to come out less than that, but more than that. Either way, the Gemara says, this chzib, l'chein in any sach es derkecha b'sirim. I'm going to hedge your way with thorns. And so we learn from over here that this pasuk is saying that the roads have been like the thorns, that they're obstructed. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Mahacha Dechsev Nesivoisai Iva. The pasuk says he twisted my paths. So this also is the way that you have to go is also twisted. Now the Mishnah is continuing how to describe how Beis Din would be mekabel the witnesses. Chatzer Gedoyla Haisa Bishalayim. They had a very large courtyard in Shalayim. Beis Yazik Haisa Nikreis is called Beis Yazik. I'm going to tell you where that comes from. Beis Yazik. Ulisham Kola Edim is constant there. The witnesses would gather. L'chor, we're talking about the witnesses who would come on Shabbos, that they would have to stay there. Others understand, the Rambam seems to understand that this was always a place that they would interrogate the witnesses to make sure that they were speaking the truth, and they couldn't, the Mekadosh HaChodesh al-Pi, what they had seen. Uveistin Botkin Osam Sham, the Beistin would examine them there. Usudos Gedolos Hayu Osin. They would make a very large feast before them when they would see the new moon, which fills Shahir Gilan Lava, because they wanted to come. A good way to get people to come to a shir is if you offer food. If you have food will be served, that's the best way to have a shir. So you're also getting people to come, you give them a very nice meal, so then they're going to feel very good about coming. Bereshona Layu Zazin Misham Kolayam. They were not allowed to leave there all day. We know, right? If a person leaves your tchum, which goes beyond this Chum Shabbos, you're not allowed to leave. You're not allowed to leave more than 4 amos from your current location. If the person is inside a walled enclosure, so this whole walled enclosure would be considered a dalad amos, and you can travel inside of it. Those just point out. They point out. Wait a second, Yerushalayim is all walled. So why can't you just go within all Yerushalayim? Because it's all considered one area of dalad amos. So if it's enclosed by walls, so Tosfos explain they must be talking about the time coming up, the time of Hanukkah, right? We're almost at Rosh Chodesh Kislev coming up this week. Tosfos explaining that the Mishnah is referring to the time after the Avanim had already breached the walls of Yerushalayim to the point where it's no longer considered enclosed, and that's why they couldn't go past this one area, Eloyez Mishim Kalayim, this one area. However, even that, Hiskin, Rabbi Gamliel Azak, the elder, he made Shayyim Halchan Alpaim Amal Choruach. He made a decree that they should be allowed to go 2,000 amos beyond the city limits of Shalayim, even all of Shalayim, and within, and past 2,000 amos of that, that was in order to not discourage the witnesses from coming in the future. V'lo elu bilva, not only that, the people of the new moon, when else can you go for, be like the people, the residents of the city, even though you came from outside the tchum, for the following. Ala afa chachma balayelet, all 5 years of a midwife coming to deliver a baby, so she's going to be reluctant to come, so we want to make sure that we allow her to come, we allow her to go 2,000 amos. Aba le'atzim and blikam and agayasim narim and apolis, also someone's coming to rescue from a fire, from the attacking army, from the flooding river, from the last building, all these people in the kanshi area of kulas, to make sure that, to encourage them to save lives, you're saving them, they're considered like people of the city, and therefore we have a kula to allow them to go 2,000 amos in every direction. This is partially part of what we see over here, that we want to encourage pikuach nefesh. That's part of the reason that Rav Moshe, not this exact reason, but with Betzem, that the idea, the famous idea that Hatzal allowed to drive back, is we want to encourage people to save lives. That this premise, though, is that where Rav Moshe is coming from, is that we want to encourage people to save lives. If a person is going to have to go, a Hatzal guy is going to have to sit in the hospital the whole time and not be able to drive back to his house, in the future he's not going to respond to a call. That was Rav Moshe's whole chash. So he says it's pikuach nefesh for the future times to be able to drive back home. That was the famous fact that the Hatzalas in America all rely on all, but whatever. Most people, I think, on the Hatzalah will rely on that psak of Rav Moshe. It's some idea that we want to encourage people to save lives. Now the Gemara says, Ibai Lahu. So they asked the question, what is the Girsa, what is the correct text of the Mishnah? Is it Beis Yazik? It's not Beis Yazik, or is it Beis Yazik? without the ayin. What is the difference between the two? Beis Yazik with an ayin is we want to learn out lishna ma'ayin, and a positive indication of this room that they would go to. The pasuk says you protect it with a fence and you clear it of stone. So this pasuk in Yeshayahu is referencing to something that's good. That's a positive connotation of protecting something from the courtyard. Odilma beis yazik without the ayin tnan, and that's a negative connotation. Lishna detzarehu, and which has an expression of discomfort. Kedesivuhu asar bazikin. The pasuk says you're bound in chains, and this was have a negative connotation because Rashi points out the witnesses were going to be confined to the courtyard as if they're in chains. So that's something that was sad for them and didn't have a good connotation. So the Gemara says, so which is it? So the Gemara says now, Amar Abaye Toshma, we're going to reproof from the Mishnah, which said, Se'udot Kedilas Hayozen Laim Shalom. They made great feasts for them, so they must have enjoyed it. So Kedesha Ragin Lavo, so they must have enjoyed it, as Rashi points out, so that would indicate that it was a good thing. So therefore, we should be teaching it based Yazik with the ayin, and therefore it's a Lishna Malya. And that's because it was a very Geshmak the Matzah. There was a great situation for people to come and eat the Sudas there. So Gemara says, Gemara rejects this, Dilma Tarte Havu Avdibahu. But maybe they had both situations. Maybe on one end they enjoyed the great feast, but it was, and that was great for them. However, after they eat, they were sad that they had to be stuck in that little place the whole Shabbos, and that's why originally it was called Beis Yazik without the with a negative connotation. Okay, very interesting. So we reject the bias proof. So then the Gemara says, now next Mishnah. We're up to the next Mishnah. Is how would they interrogate with regards to the new moon? I'm not a bucky in this, but what I've studied, I'll hopefully give over how I understand the sigis over here about the levanas and the chamam. Kate said, "Bodkinus ha'edim." How do they examine the witnesses? Zug shebari. The pair that arrives first, they'd be examined first. The elder one of them would come in. That's the general halacha that we want to give kavod to the elder ones. That same thing that the Gemara in Gittin tells us, that they were the oldest one there would sign first on the get. So what they would ask, how did you see the new moon that you claim to have seen? How did you see it? So our Mishnah is, again, obviously also we shouldn't point out that we also have the regular chakiros. They're supposed to have the regular chakiros, right? Be'ezah Malkom, where were you? And Be'ezah Shana, what year is it? And Shana of the Shemitah, and what month? What day of the month? What day of the week? Compared to the Zayin chakiros with the Jewish chakiros, the Chorab, they Pashat had to ask those questions as well. So this, in addition to that, they would ask him, there's a Metzias of, were they able to tell that they saw the new moon? Lifnei Chama L'Achar Chama, was it before the sun or after the sun? So then, basically, we mentioned before that the new moon is basically closely following the path of the sun across the sky from the east to the west. So based on Master Witness, whether he saw the moon before, meaning ahead of the sun in its path, or behind the sun. So this Rashi points out some background information over here, that the sun basically rises each morning in the east and sets, we know, in the west, in Eretz Yisrael, which is in the northern hemisphere, right? So then the sun travels at a right angle to the horizon. It will never travel to right angle horizon. Rather, the sun rises at an angle to the south. So during the morning, the sun moves westward, rising higher and higher, and it also travels further and further towards the south. At noon, the sun is at its highest point, and it's also the most, southerly point. So the sun begins to go down, turning towards the north as it continues westward. So during the afternoon, the sun becomes lower and lower, continuing to the north. So therefore, if the sun rises in the east and travels southward in the morning, continues northward in the afternoon, setting to the west. That's how Rashi defines it. And the new moon is following a similar path of the sun. Its trail is behind the sun. And on the 30th day, the new moon, which arises shortly after sunrise and shortly after sunset, is very small and barely can be seen, right? Even in the beginning, you can't even see it during the daylight, only close to sunset towards the skia late afternoon. So the new moon will trail the sun, and that is trailing to the north. The new moon will be seen at the sun's south. That's how we know the Metzias to be. And therefore, we're asking if it's Lifnei Chama L'Achar Chama. Litzponet Lo Jama, is it north or to the south? The new moon is visible on the western horizon at the same time as sunset. The new moon sets shortly after the sun sets. So the Beis is asking the witness if he saw both the sun and the moon, and if so, was the moon north or the south? In other words, is it facing the west of the horizon, or did he see it to the right or to its left? So the Gemara says, "Kama higa boa." How high was the sky in relation to the moon? The witnesses were asked to how high above the horizon the moon appeared. Rashi says, "And which way was it pointing? In which directions, kilu, the horns of the moon, the crescent, were its point of it? Kama haya rachav, and also how wide was this moon? And im amar lifnei chama lo amar klum. So if he said it was before the sun, then he's going to dismiss his testimony because the new moon always trails behind the sun and its path across the sky. So therefore, if the witness is claiming that he saw the sun and the moon ahead of the sun, then he's saying nothing because lachora, that's not the metzias. It's not correct. So then they would ask the second one the same questions. So then if they in fact were in agreement, then they would be able to accept their testimony. And the rest of them, they would ask the other pair of witnesses, just the main points. They didn't need them. They already had the correct edus, but they didn't want them to think that they were useless in coming there. So they didn't want them to come disappointed. Oh, look, we just came over here and violated Shabbos and nothing happened. So no, they asked them the questions to assume that they're part of the edus ki'ilu. Because again, they want them to be accustomed to come. They're going to never come in the future. If they see that their testimony wasn't accepted, they'll just say, "Oh, someone else will do it." Everyone's going to say someone else will do it, and no one's going to do it. So that's a very important so that we want to make them feel chashuv. So therefore, the mission is deciding that it was before the one after the sun. Mara asks, "Wait a second, though. So which is before the sun and also to the north? Aren't they the same question?" Which is the same question to the sun is to the south. One and the same question over here. So the Mishnah stated that in order to basically when asking the two questions in order to tell if he's telling the truth. Was it before or after the sun? And question two, was it the moon sighted in the north setting or the south? So we explained already that lechora is after the sun setting is the same thing to its south and before the sun setting is the same thing as to its north. So isn't the same exact question? So Gemara says, "Amar Abaye, pigmasa lefnei ola achar chama." So Abaye is saying the first question the witnesses were asked was it before or after the sun means was the indentation of the moon was it towards the sun or after the sun? And the next section of the Mishnah is telling us, "Im amar lefnei chama lomar klum." If he said it was before, if it was facing the sun, then he had said nothing because the new moon originally appears as a thin crescent. The source of the moon is really round. So then we're assuming over here that if according to Abaye, the question was whether or not the space in between the moon was facing the sun. That's what we're asking. And in actual fact, any moment the half of the moon's surface is illuminated by the sun due to the person seeing it. At that time, it's not visible, so therefore, if it's not completely visible, then he was not saying the emes. You remember, that's what we just said. What is the meaning of the pasuk which says that that Hashem creates the dominions, people are scared, and he makes peace within the heights? So what does this mean? That means that Hashem arranged a creation that the sun had never seen the space of the other opposite end of the moon, the other space of the moon, nor did he see the space, the other side of the rainbow. Because both the rainbow and the moon, they receive their light from the sun. So the part that they don't see, the face is always facing away from the sun. That's what we're assuming. And why not? Because he didn't allow the sun to see the back space of the rainbow, so that the worshippers of the sun shouldn't say, turning out their sun now, that the sun is shooting arrows at those who are denying it. The sun is able to take over the rainbow. So we're to face the sun, and the worshippers actually says they would think that the sun is ki'ilu like a bow and arrow, or archer who is shooting arrows at the things that rejected. Interesting thing. Obviously, there's deeper kavanah. It's not like a 5-year-old that really think that, but we have to understand the deeper kavanah of how they would think that it's of what is art. But anyway, that's what the Gemara says. Now we're up to the next point. The Mishnah, Bezer Hashem, will pick up with Kama Hayagavah, Bezer Hashem, in tomorrow's daf.